The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What is up, my fellow addicts? Ralph Sutton, the SDR Show. This week, a dude, I'll be honest with you, we're trying to get him on forever. So happy he is on. You might know him as the pirate from Dodgeball. You might know him from Firefly or any one of the countless shows he was in, most recently, Resident Alien. We're talking about Alan Tudyk. Comes on the show, just a fun, cool dude. So happy that he's on the show. We do this every single Wednesday, Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern time. And you can go to gasdigitalnetwork.com, watch live for free, or you subscribe using the code SDR. You get 20% off access to every episode we've ever done, all the way back to the beginning of time. Shannon right now going through all the old episodes to truly see who's won more contests, me or Jay. Shannon, real quick, where is it at?
So far, it's you, but right. I have to say, and this isn't just me blowing smoke because I work on the show and I've worked on it forever, but I recommend to anybody out there, go back to the early days of the video episodes. You are missing out if you don't listen from the beginning.
It used to be really crazy.
It's great.
It's going to get back to being crazy again because once my elevator and power is working, we're going to go back to doing crazy shit in my house. We had to clean up here because of old man Lewis. Anyway, here it is right now, the Alan Tudyk episode of The SDR Show.
This is the intro to the shit show. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. This is the hit show. Show me your tit show. Please, someone walk the hole. It's weed, I beat, it's hookers and blow. It's art, it's far, you need to know. The SDR Show. Let's go.
It is the SDR Show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Show. I am Ralph Sutton. Back with me once again in some sort of bizarrely lit camera room thing going on. Is James Madden. I don't know what he's doing, for God's sake.
A lot of chaos, but I don't have monkeypox, and that's a begin. That's what's positive.
Could you, like, it looked like you were in a fucking having an earthquake for a second there. Were you all right now, James?
Here's my tribute to 1989's World Series. Yo, we're good, dude. I mean, look, I didn't think I was going to be able to do this. We're making it happen. I'm excited. It's a great guest.
Me too. And so here's what's interesting, by the way. We get this guy. He's coming on the show. I'm a big fan of him for so many reasons. We'll explain all of it as we go, but I have seen your name pronounced 100 different ways, right? Yeah. And every interview, it's Tudyk, Tudyk, but it's actually Alan Tudyk, and you actually put it phonetically on your Zoom. First question would have to be, before we get into anything, I imagine fucking high school in Texas was rough with that last name.
Oh, man, it was tough. I was Tutti Frutti until about the fourth grade, and then kids went, it was like it just hit. Where it was like one of them went, wait a second. Come here. It's Tudyk. I think we're missing a huge opportunity.
Yeah, it's like at South Park where they have Mick's chokes on Dick and they said, it's Mick's make me sick. Like, no, you're missing the actual obvious joke, for God's sake.
Yeah, I did meet a Polish, it's Polish. I did meet a Polish model a few years ago who I was talking to, and she had an accent. I said, where are you from? And she said, she was from Poland. And I said, oh, that's my heritage. And she said, what is your last name? And I said, Tudyk. And she said, that's beautiful. So.
Does it mean something in Polish? Do you know?
I think it means two penises. Two penises. Yeah.
Maybe that's a fair enough. And also it says something about you as a person that you never decided to change it for acting. Because it is A, odd to look at. You're not sure how to pronounce it. And B, right. When they figure it out, it is a little humiliating. Just like my name is Ralph. Ralph, growing up, we're about the same age. I think you're 51. I'm 52. My name means A, to throw up in the South. Right. B, there was the famous Eddie Murphy, hey, Ralphie boy, come here, let me fuck you in the ass, which was not a good way to grow up. And then C, there was a book that I describe as the Twilight for my generation, where every young girl read it. It was called, I can't remember, Forever by Judy Blume. And in it, the guy names his penis Ralph. So I had three losing things with Ralph, and I kept it anyway. So same, I feel for you.
You know, it's weird. I knew an older actor. I drove an older actor. It was one of my first jobs when I was still living in Dallas for the Dallas Shakespeare Festival, Earl Hyman, who played the grandfather in the Cosby Show, he was playing Prospero in The Tempest, and I was given the job of being his driver. Mm-hmm. And we became friends. And when I went to New York and I got my first job, I asked him if I should change my name. He said, no, Alan, that's a wonderful name. Stick with it. Tudyk. Tudyk. His name was Hyman. Yeah. His last name was fucking Hyman. I was like, what did I think he was going to say? So I got counseled by a Hyman, and he suggested Tudyk was just great.
That's fucking great. I love it. And that's also, by the way, so you were in Wreck-It Ralph, right? And then yeah. I think from there forward, you've been in like every like Disney project and every like, your voice is in so many different VO things, which is crazy.
Right.
I like in looking you up, like it's amazing how many different voices you've been. Even like you've played the Flash, Superman, Alfred, and the Joker. It's crazy. And I think even Batman. What, like you've done everybody. It's wild. How many different voices you've been in superheroes alone.
Yeah, I know. It all came from Disney. You're right. It started with Disney. It started with Wreck-It Ralph. That's really where, once they give you the thumbs up, then it sort of gives everybody the ability to hire you. And I don't know. I just keep saying yes. So,
you know, it's funny. When Wreck-It Ralph came out, I was in college. And I called somehow, I don't know how you do this, before the internet, really, you know, we're talking a long time ago. Oh, no, sorry, it wasn't Wreck-It Ralph. It was King Ralph, where I tried to get a King Ralph jacket because my name is Ralph. I wanted to walk around campus with a King Ralph jacket. I got in touch with the production company, but they said, we're not going to give you a fucking jacket, dude. It's like, no way it's going to happen.
Like, isn't that the name of the Judy Blume penis? Why do you want to wear that?
Yeah, exactly, for sure. And then the way most of us, I would say, that are fans of yours, I would imagine got introduced to you, at least from my knowledge, and James said the same thing, was the pirate in Dodgeball, right? That's yeah. where a lot of, I think you got a lot of recognition from that. The story I heard, which I like, is I was wondering, like, did you bring the pirate to this, or was that already written as a pirate? And I heard that you went in set and everybody was dressed as pirates but you, because you didn't yeah. know, but your line was, we should harvest the whales for their oil, and that's what got you the gig. Is that right?
yeah, that's it. It was in the script that he was a pirate. I actually, when I read it, I was kind of dumb. I was dumb about it when I first read it. I thought it was really funny, and I told my agent, if they cut this pirate role, this thing's a hit. He said, do you mind reading it again and focus more on how special that pirate role is? And so I got it. And then when I went in and I saw and there were good people. Patrick Warburton was there, was auditioning. Mm-hmm. I'm not gonna remember anybody, but there was good actors there that I was like, oh shit, I really gotta try hard. And this is a good role. If all these people see it, this is a really good role. And then they let us improv.
Would you say, now you've been in so many other things, but was that got to be the one that most people would like come up and give you an ARG or something like that? Or is it Firefly and Serenity with like, what is it? My leaf in the wind, the line that you had in Firefly, right? Would you say that Dodgeball is the number one?
Well, Dodgeball is easy to yell like across a crowded street or something. So I'll just hear gar and yar being shouted from random directions. So I do hear that a lot. I get a Knight's Tale a lot, which
that's funny,
because I think a lot of people saw it when they were kids, and then it's a good kids movie because there was no blood in it, mm-hmm. there was no cussing in it. It was like a fairy tale. Keith Ledger's a badass, so there are a lot of people it's that one in Dodgeball.
And the nice story about that is your first on-screen kiss was Sandra Bullock. Your second one was Heath Ledger. That's pretty good.
That's what we call 1-2 punch, my dude.
Who was the better kisser, for God's sakes?
I got money on Heath.
Oh, it's Sandy. Although I had a little crush on her back when we did that movie. Who wouldn't? I have a great picture that Heath took. I had a camera. We all took tons of pictures when we made that movie. And then it was pre-selfie, but it was a little bitty film camera. And when we rehearsed the kiss, Heath said, let me see your camera. And right as I kissed, he took a photo of it. And It's of him. He's got like a side eye to the camera, like smiling, like, hey, and it's me spitting just after the kiss. And it's this great. I have it here. Yeah.
You should NFT that fucker for charity or something. That's what you should do.
Oh, that would be good. Cause it's Heath Ledger took the photo. So yeah. it's his artistry.
Meanwhile, I have to ask, as such an accomplished voice actor that's been in so many fucking things, would you agree that my voice is just delicious? It's just such a warm, full, deep, beautiful voice.
I don't think you could have gotten away with doing anything else in life except something that harnesses the power of that voice. I mean, you could power cities with that.
Yeah, that's what I...
Big city, but like, you know, Fresno.
Like, yeah, at least Fresno. At least Fresno.
Ralph, you're the Fresno of voices.
That's fine. I'll take it.
That is the greatest merch you could ever have.
Coming from Alan, I'll fucking take it. You're kidding me? So that, by the way, it leads me to, I think, so again, I try and do a lot of research, and sometimes I'm right, sometimes I'm wrong, so I apologize. But go back to 98, you were in a play where you had to play 25 different roles. And then you played Adam in a play. And that Adam character was the inspiration for Resident Alien a bit. But let's start with the play where you did 25 roles. Is that where you understood, oh, I can just do fucking all these different accents and voices and stuff?
I kind of knew I could do I had been in an improv troupe in Dallas, Texas called Rubber Chicken before I went to school in New York City. So I kind of came into Juilliard with that skill. And then they taught me Shakespeare and all of the voice work and all the hard work. And then when I left, sort of the first job I got actually just was one that I could have done if I had skipped school altogether, because it was sketches. It was like, it was Alan Twybell wrote it. He was one of the first writers.
Oh, we've had Alan on the show. I actually met him a few times. I love Alan. Talented.
So it's Twybell. So Twybell wrote, it was his best work because it was a play about him and Gilda Radner throughout the story of their meeting up until she dies. And I played everybody else besides Bruno Kirby played Alan Zweibel, and a girl named Paula Kael played, a woman named Paula Kael played Gilda Radner. And so I'd be like a guy who came in and he's got no thumbs because he works on the lathe and he makes his own furniture. And that's how he lost his eye. And then I'd come in and I would, Gilda's friend, Big Bone Judy, just lost your boyfriend, and I'd have to run off stage and I'd change and come on in a different outfit, and I just did a bunch of roles, and it was a nice flashy first job to have on New York stage, and that's how cool. I got into voice. I mean, the voiceover, I did Ice Age from that. So the cast director who did Ice Age said, I saw your play, you can do a lot of voices, come in and do this. But then I didn't do another thing until Disney. So,
I Robot is VO sort of, I guess, right? I mean, you were Sonny in I Robot. That's kind of
that one leaned a little bit more on the theater training because it was one of the early motion capture jobs that was out there. The Lord of the Rings had just come out, so people were just getting educated on what that could be. And I was wearing this green, what I called a body panty, sort of a spandex control top all over thing. And with
like Green Man
it.
From Always Sunny in Philadelphia kind of vibe.
Exactly. And so I did that, but it was 6 months and it was cool. It was a big education because I saw the movie with me in it in my green suit, and then I remember going to watch it go to see certain scenes at the digital place where they erased me and put in the robot. It was, to be honest, hard.
for
me as an actor to go, oh, okay, right, I'm erased. And as good as they did, and they did a great job, and they were determined. Alex Proyas was the director. He was like, Alan's eyebrow moves a little bit there, and his mouth moves a little there, and he has to be perfect for what Alan did. And that isn't the sum of a performance, all your facial movements. That isn't what does it. We communicate stuff with our bodies. We don't even register, like people's faces get flushed. We see a glistening on the eyes of wet, like we're reading so much from each other as just basic monkey people that we don't, that you don't get, that you don't even comprehend what's happening. Anyway, that was a tricky
It
thing
actually made me think of something, because you said that you watched that movie with you in it and then they took you out of it, right?
Yeah.
Your wife, a lot of people may not know, was a well-known choreographer. She did the intro to Peacemaker. She choreographed it. And somewhere there's the Alan Tudyk version of it without John Cena, you playing John Cena. That should be released somewhere.
Wow.
We have it. She has it on her computer. Yeah, it was during the height of the pandemic, and it was before there were any vaccinations. And so she choreographed it with me. She did it. I like to say we did it together, but she did it. She directed it and choreographed it. And I was kind of the low bar, as far as she said, you know, my husband's an actor, so everything I do, I'll get him to do. And if he can do it, anybody can do it. Because part of the job was, this is going to have to be done by actors, not dancers, you know. So whatever dance you come up with needs to be within reach for a typical actor.
As long as my husband could pull it off, anybody could do it.
Yeah. And all so right. Then we sent it, and James was like, I didn't know it was you. I assumed he knew that Carissa was my wife, but he didn't. That's and it exists. It'll come out one day. Something that good.
Yeah, has to. Just like my voice was meant for the world. That cut's got to go there somewhere. We're
going
to get into Resident Alien in a minute. I just want to touch on a few other things. One that I find, where another symbiotic thing here, besides, of course, our gorgeous voices, the movie you've seen more than any other movie, I would say, is the same movie I've seen more than any other movie, which is Young Frankenstein, my favorite movie of all time. I got to see Mel Brooks introduce and talk about Blazing Saddles at Radio City, which is one of my highlights of my life, to see that happen. Knowing that you're such a big fan, did you ever get to meet Mel?
Yes, man. Check this out. So they made a musical, Young Frankenstein, right? So
yeah, I didn't love the musical, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, no, it didn't work. It didn't work. It didn't work. Zach Levi was supposed to play that role. I think it would have been different if Zach Levi played it. But he got a job. Oh, he got Chuck. Oh. That's a little inside, because I remember when that happened. He's got a great voice. He's a very good singer. Anyway, I got called in to audition. I, unlike Zach Levi, cannot sing very well. I have a very limited range. That one was written very high, and he wanted it to be impressive as a musical as well as funny. He wanted it to be something different from the producers. Anyway, I got called in to meet him at one point in Culver City. He had an office, and my probably still does. And I sang a song. I brought a song from A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum. And it's not a song. It's just, it was like a... it was the wrong kind of song. They need a ballad that shows off your singing. Mm-hmm. And he's like, so do you have anything else? And I was like, no, I don't. I've got anything. And there's a pianist there. And he said, how about Putting on the Ritz from the movie? And I know it from the movie. So I said, oh, yeah, I can definitely sing that. And so I sang that, if you're blue and you don't know where to go to, why don't you go where fashion sits? And then Mel Brooks, put it on the wall.
Oh, really?
Oh, it's dope.
And, right. So we sang the song with him doing the monster part and
That's great. That's so cool.
Frederick Frankenstein part.
Wow, that's awesome. I mean, also, by the way, if you've not listened to it, because it's much better to listen to it because he reads the whole thing. His autobiography is just, what's amazing is the first, let's say, two or three chapters, it's like him growing up. But then it's each chapter is each movie he's done in chronological order and the experience of doing that movie. It's so worth, and he does voices and stuff. It's much more immersive to listen to him do it and tell it than anything else. I could not say enough good things about that, by the way, just on a side note. I would recommend that. Before we go any further, one of our longtime sponsors, you know them, you love them, especially if you have a car. We're talking about rockauto.com. Everything you need for all your car needs,
whether you're an auto shop, a car guy, a car dealer, or just someone that likes to peruse shit with cars, you're going to find something you like. You can end up buying it either for yourself or for your friends. And the best part of it all is you know you're getting the best possible prices. They've been doing it for 20 years, and they do it better than anyone else. It is rockauto.com. No codes for discounts. No worries there. They just know they got the best possible prices. All they ask is when you buy something, you tell them you heard about them on the SDR show. So go peruse all the car shit, buy something fun for your car, and then you walk around in style, drive around in style like only you can when you visit rockauto.com. Rockauto.com. Let's get back into it.
So now, I mean, there's a bunch of other movies we can get into in a little bit, but let's talk now, which I am, by the way, loving, is Resident Alien. I started watching it when it first came out, you know, the first season. My favorite moment in the first season, just because I like lowbrow comedy, was when you accidentally took the picture of the girl's vagina when you're underneath. By like actually spit take funny was that scene.
Right. Yeah, because he thinks he's going to remove a mole off of a kid or something like that. Let's take a look at that nasty thing. And it got switched around, so he was actually doing a pap smear. So he goes under her thing and says, now let's take a look at that nasty thing. And she's the town slut. She's my favorite character, Judy. She's just the greatest. Hurry up down there. The lettuce is drying out. I think she's so he's looking on his phone to try to figure out what he's supposed to be doing under there, because he doesn't understand. And actually takes a picture, and that was a good thing. Where they you shot see from the out flash. There, you just see the flash from
it's
under.
Fucking great! It's fucking great. And so, you know, a lot of people may not know that the guy that creator of the show is Chris Sheridan, who comes from Family Guy for years, or just a well written, great writer. So that it's from it's based on a comic book, and I read that I was not familiar with the comic either. And you were not as well, right?
Yeah, no. And the comic is different. The comic is the comic almost reads like a Law and Order, which is, it's just, there's an alien at the center. It's kind of sober, sort of finding little small town crime and solving it. And
is that why Law and Order is your favorite show on the thing? Is that an inside joke? Or is that from the comic?
That is not from the comic. That is from Chris Sheridan. So I guess it's sort of a hat tip to that. Because the comic's more like a police procedural in a way. And then a lot of things change within the comic. The sheriff is like this old white guy, and we have Corey Reynolds playing Big Black. He asks everybody to call him Big Black. Nobody wants to. We're not going to do that. There's a lot of different changes. The mayor's older, but the Asta character's there.
And it's grown out from there. And also what's crazy that a lot of people may not realize, the pilot was shot back in 2018. So it was sitting for a couple of years before it actually came out. A, that had to be weird. And then B, you guys did something I've never seen in a while where, you know, season two is like double the length roughly of season one, but you took... I don't know, what is it, 6 month break between season 2A and 2B? That was weird also.
Not my choice, but yeah. It's weird. The whole thing has been weird. The timing of it's been weird. We shot it. It was good. Everybody was like, oh, this is really good. We're going to put it on a shelf for a while. And it was always like, there's contracts that you have that they have to do something with it by this date. That's a far flung date that you'd never assume they're going to we'll get anywhere near, but it seemed like every one of those trigger dates, they'd walk it right up to that date, and then they'd pick it up, and then that gave them an extra 6 months. And I think it was just they were figuring stuff out with the network, what they wanted to do with sci-fi. It was a little different from other sci-fi shows, and so picking up the show meant maybe a bit of a different direction.
Yeah,
my assumptions.
The long break in season two was like he stopped in New York, and then we waited to see what happened. It was kind of weird. And I read that they saw over 100 people before. It's not like it was written for you. You went to audition, right?
Yeah, I went into audition, which just says, why did the casting director not? Why did it take her 100 people before she thought of me?
You know who else was in the running or no?
No. I heard Now, I don't know that this is true because I haven't talked to him.
Mm-hmm.
An actor I consider to be a better actor than me auditioned for it. His name is Jimmy Simpson. He is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know, Jimmy?
Oh, yeah.
I was like, because when they're like, Alan, you did this and nobody else could do it. And I was like, I know a few guys who can do this. And I would immediately think of Jimmy, because whenever I would see Jimmy at auditions, I'd be like, I hire you. He's got a real ease to his work. He's a good guy. But evidently he auditioned for it, according to some of the other cast members, because they were all cast. It was just they were waiting for the alien to be cast. So they were sort of talking to the creator, like, who are you seeing next to? So they have more information about that.
One of the great things, which is a good inside joke of the show in season one, I'm going to fuck up his name, but Mr. Ancient Aliens himself, Giorgio something, right? Is that his name?
Yeah, I've never seen Tsoukalos,
but he was in the show, which has got to be great to get that dude. That had to be a fun thing. I've never actually seen Ancient Aliens, but I know people fucking love that show. So,
yeah, my dad, I just found out, is a huge fan of Ancient Aliens. And I, you know, he's a cool guy to know whenever something comes out. And remember, there was that weird in Utah, there was like a, suddenly there was that silver thing that they found in the middle of nowhere. Right. And they're like, what? This is aliens. I could just text him and go, what the fuck is going on with this pillar in Utah? He's like, nope, it's not.
Did you ask him when Oumuamua, that big long thing, came into the city, into the universe? Did you text him on that one? You remember
No, what is that?
That was that crazy thing they discovered. It was like a long obelisk that was floating in space. It looked as the first object to come into our solar system from another solar system. You never heard of that? It's called the Oumuamua. You should ask him what the fuck that was. Yeah, I know my. Look, we had Neil deGrasse Tyson on the show. I don't fuck around. I love that.
Yeah,
show.
Man. Goddamn
Disney movie with The Rock. Oumuamua.
That's Moana.
He was in Moana. He was in Moana as well. But you have
Daisy. What are you gonna do?
You have Linda Hamilton on the show, which is great, and also which is very unique for, especially for like mainstream television. It's a lot of cursing on the show, which you wouldn't think was done these days, but I like that it's done.
Yeah,
makes it feel more real.
Yeah, the sheriff drops a lot of F-bombs there. I feel like, well, that's just natural for Corey as a human. He cusses a lot. You should follow him on Twitter if you want. You want to hear a nice string of curse words together. Thank curses. You. Expletives. Curses together, strung together. He does a good job of that.
And I didn't realize this, by the way, that it's actually you in the alien costume.
Yeah,
because it's such a, that's got to be an arduous task to put that thing on all the time.
Yeah, man. it's funny, you know, the little boy, Judah Prane, who plays Max, little kid who can see me as an alien. So whenever I have scenes with him, I've got to put on the alien mask. It's like I've got to get up at 4 or 5 a.m. and come in earlier than everybody because it's 2 hours before anybody arrives to put this stuff on. He thinks it's very funny that whenever I work with him, I have to get up super early and put on an uncomfortable glue and rubber application. But it rips my nose. There's a little thing on my nose. We'll see if we get it right this season.
Oh.
Towards the end of this, there's a big head. When the alien's really tall, the head is larger and it's heavy. And it slowly just sort of rips the skin off my nose.
And is it right that the heads are all single use? The mask is single use?
Yeah, I want to do something for charity.
That means each time you take one off, it's just not, there's no way that it can salvage it. They got to build another one.
Right. When I first put it on, it's everything. It goes right down to here. And then this part is left open and they put a new one on. Glue it to my lips, and then they paint this part is unpainted. So then they paint this part, and so when they take it off, it just rips all apart.
Lucy masks, baby.
Lucy?
Lucy's like one and done, baby.
One and done. Lucy's, I got you.
Street. I'm sorry, I'm not talking mooey or whatever you're talking about, Ralph.
You're so street. I went high, you went low, James. I'm talking about a mooey. You're talking Lucy's, for God's sake. So then any other, I don't want to spend that much, there's so many other things to talk about, but what I like about Resident Alien so far also is that the fact that there's an alien in the storyline is just an extra thing. Like there's actually all the characters are interesting, which is, it's not like they're relying on the alien to be the just the only interesting story to them. You follow what I'm saying there?
Yeah. Chris wanted to make us make a show about a town full of interesting people that happens to have an alien in it. That,
right.
That there's enough going on in the town that if the alien, I don't know, went back home, that it would still be an interesting place to go visit.
Right. Or if he decides to stay or whatever. Yeah. And also, like, the probably, again, for those that haven't seen the show, the one of the better montages early on is when you, so your character takes over a person that's in the town that was the doctor and you become that person, but you are learning to be human. And there's like a montage of you learning how to walk, trying to sit down. And it's just great. It really gets into that character well, where you follow, okay, I get what this is all about.
Yeah, that was fun. We didn't have much time. I mean, for that one scene where I'm walking and falling and trying to sit and falling and eating a chicken, we had like, I think it was like 20 minutes, like set up the cameras, like, we're just going to shoot this way. What do you got? Here's a chicken. Here's, I'm like, well, I got this chair thing I want to do where I'm trying to sit down, but then I go the wrong, my balance gets off and I fall forward instead. And then I was like, maybe, because they're like, we don't have a costume change. I was like, well, I'll just take off my pants. And so that was just kind of how we were doing it. We were like, yeah, great. Just do
it. It also won an award for, was it Hollywood Critics Award for best cable comedy series. So, you know, it is, I really enjoy it. I think it's a really fun show. But what's wild also is looking you up, like James just said, you know, you were in Moana, but I mean, you were in fucking Arrested Development. You were in Doom Patrol, which was a great show. Then I think it was only two seasons, but boy, did I love this show. Dirk Gently was a fucking great show.
Yeah, that was cool.
I don't think enough people knew about it. Only, I think it was two seasons, maybe three, but it's just a fucking great show. All these different roles, are you still with all of them? You're going out to them, or are any of them brought to you at this point?
It's some are brought, some I have to go out. I don't know. The business is weird. I've always just been a worker, you know, like a worker actor. I just, whatever, when certain, like, that's why I do voiceovers. Like, I've done comedy, I do drama, I've done film and television. I'm lucky to get to do all of these things, but it's been helpful to have a longevity in the career because, you know, sometimes people are like, I don't know. They're just not seeing you in roles in film where you're going out and they're like, no, we don't get it. We don't get the thing that's you. And then I'll find something in television. And then if that isn't going on, there's something else I can do. Maybe go do a play.
Right. That's great. It's wild because you have done it. Is when you look at your list of credits, it's like you've done a bunch of video game voiceovers and a bunch of Broadway shows and TV. It is wild.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.
The one, by the way, best name ever, but unfortunately it's not going to be used because you were the K2SO robot. And there's a TV show coming out and you wanted to call it K2 Fast, K2 Furious, which is great.
What about me?
Not going to do it. Great name.
Well, they didn't I'm not in it.
You're good. I thought you're going to be in it in like the next season or so if it gets picked up again.
I don't think so.
Don't get me hot.
I burp here from my LaCroix. I just saw an interview with Tony Gilroy, who's in charge of that whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that K2SO is a awkward piece of luggage to haul around or something like that. So I don't think he meant like Louis Vuitton. I don't think he saw me as like a nice, expensive piece of luggage.
Fair enough.
He was seeing me as something that, you know, bursts open, and when it comes out on the thing, it's spilling everywhere. So they're only going to do two seasons of it, and I think I'm busy.
That character's amazing, though. That's a great character. I got a weird relationship with all these prequels, and that movie's spectacular, and that character's great.
Yeah, the Gareth Edwards, who directed that movie, was fantastic. He was really, like, so much of that stuff was improv, which in a Star Wars movie, I couldn't even comprehend that he would let us do that.
Mm-hmm.
The best thing, because you're CGI, I was, and Diego Luna, who plays Andor, Cassian Andor, he is a great guy, and he and I got along really well. I really like him, and it was a crazy process, man. Like, they were rewriting while we were doing it.
Wow.
And this is how this happened. So there was if you know the movie, there's a part where I slap Cassian and I say, and there's a fresh one if you mouth off again. And so how that happened was, he shows up to the scene with a welt on his lip, and he's like, okay, we're ready to go. And the director's like, oh no, they've rewritten the scene. So the scene where you got slapped and you have that welt on your lip doesn't exist anymore. So we have to take that back off. And Dio's like, I've been here for an hour and a half putting this shit on, and now you've got to take it off. He's like, what if K2 hits me? And because I'm doing the scene where I'm pretending to be like I've captured him. And I was like, yeah, let's do that. And so we did it. And then I just said, and there's a fresh one if you mouth off again, because I thought it was funny. And then he put it all in it all just kind of became the movie. Like, it was so by the seat of our pants.
That's wild. You would never think that would be the case in the budget of Star Wars, that is like, hey, let's just wing it and see what happens.
Yeah. But
that's wild.
It was just the director embracing. Even though it was a massive budget, it felt like it was like, oh, let's play. Let's have some fun. Let's fix. Okay, we got a problem. Let's fix it. Let's fix it right now. Oh, it's great.
Let me ask you this. So you were in the Transformers movie, but now you are playing Optimus Prime in a show coming out soon called Transformers Earthspark.
Yeah.
Did you imitate the famous guy that does Optimus Prime? Yeah, he did it in all the movies. So are you trying to captured that voice, or is it your own voice of Optimus Prime?
It's my voice. It's my voice attempting a nod at his voice. So it's kind of both things. I didn't have a lot of preparation for it. I honestly took the job thinking I was taking a different job. They offered me, I just skimmed the email, Transformers. I saw Prime. I thought it was a different Prime because the Transformers I did do, the live action one, there was a different Prime. There was Optimus Prime, but then there was some other guy who showed up. And so I was like, oh, I'll be like Catheter Prime. I'll be in every episode. I'll have two lines and it'll be fun. And it's a boyhood dream come true. And then 2 days before I did it, I looked at started to read the lines, and everything highlighted was Optimus Prime. And I had to check, and they were like, no, yeah, they want to try something a little different.
That's and crazy. So,
but it's, it's me, but it's a deeper rollout. You know, it's my attempt at him. So
that's pretty wild. James.
I'm just saying, this is amazing. Because I'm like a kid of the 80s. If you told me I'd be talking to Optimus Prime, Batman, and the Joker.
Superman. And the Flash.
I was the biggest Superman guy. I'm just going to be honest. Superman was a little corny. I mean, I know the disrespect, but I'm just saying, you're a little older than me. Could you imagine, like, when you were a kid, if you were like, I'm going to be all these
playing all these superheroes, you get a little delusion of grandeur, like you have an all-powerful guy or something?
No, because, you know, the Joker, in my Joker, he's living the best, and he's got two stepkids. It's on Harley Quinn on HBO.
Yeah,
and, you know, he wants out of the game. Although now he just ran for mayor, and it looks like he's going to be the mayor of Gotham now. When I was Superman, honestly, the Superman I played, they're like, this is the younger Superman. Because I was like, wow, I'm Superman. And they're like, yes, this is the younger Superman who's not quite sure of himself. I'm like, God damn it. I tend to be the guy when I did Halo. I mean, the classic, this tells my experience of most voiceover work. My friend Nathan Fillion, who did Firefly with me, we both did Halo. We played Halo all the time, and he did it. I was in New York when I recorded mine. We got back together. I was like, how was it? He said, oh, man, it was great. You know, I just, you know, did the usual, you know, follow me and this way. And we got him on the run, that kind of stuff. I was like, motherfucker. All my stuff was, ow, this hurts. I got a new plan. Let's hide.
I've got a hemorrhoid.
Yeah, I got a hemorrhoid. I fell on my keys. It was like that. That literally, that is my, all the voices I did for Halo. They would be like, a little higher, a little higher. There you go. Just like that. He was always just in a panic.
That's fucking great. I love that so much. You also, by the way, in the early on in your career, you were in Patch Adams with Robin Williams. You got to work with Robin Williams. That's pretty fucking, I mean, these are all pretty great stories to have.
Yeah, man. That came from that play where I did all those roles. Tom Shadyac came to town to cast that. The casting director had seen the Alan Zweibel play called Bunny Bunny. And he said, well, if you can do 20-something roles, I'll find a role in here for you. And he did. I play one of the mental patients when Patch Adams is still in the asylum right at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And I got to Michael Jeter was in that. He may remember from The Green Mile. He had the mouths. He was a fantastic actor. And he and I got along, and I remember we were just waiting for stuff to happen during the day. And he was looking out the window of the Art Insane Asylum. And I went over to him. I said, what you doing? He's like, oh, you know, I'm just looking out the window, watching the day go by. I said, well, the day is not the problem. It's the night. I can barely see. And then Robin ran over and he's like, you can't see? Did you go blind? And I said, well, I did go blind, but it's the death that's the problem. And then Michael Jeter changed the character to something else. And then Robin would change it. And then I would change it. And we were just going around and around, just improvising different characters.
Oh.
And the cast came around and was watching. And I was like standing beside myself, just going, do you see what's happening? Do you see what you're doing right now?
That's fucking crazy. Wow. What a fucking great experience. This is 20 years ago, more than 20 years ago, right? So it's
I was in my 20s. I had an outbreak of hives that day. It was a great day. Good day.
And then just to touch on a few other, which I think, you know, people don't realize, you were also, if you ever saw the movie 42, what was his name? Ben Chapman. And the story I liked was that people were coming up to you to suggest, because he was notoriously one of the most racist people. And he would say, oh, you should try and use this slur or this slur. Like, people were coming up to you to suggest more terrible things to work into the script.
Yeah, as if I wasn't saying so many awful things. I just I saw it not too long ago. It was on cable when I turned on the TV and it came on, and I heard what I was saying. I can't believe it now.
Right.
I remember doing it and it being, having an awful time doing it. Like, I was just in a bad mood. It just put me in a bad mood for a few days. Chadwick Boseman was very cool about it. After it was done, he gave me a big hug, which was great because I felt like such shit. But yeah, it was this guy, Ben Chapman, when Jackie Robinson went to bat, he would yell out all the slurs. If you don't know it, he'd yell out any slur to try to knock him off his game. Right. And it was true what he had, like, there were just, it was at a time when there were just journalists there in the stands just copying what he said and just writing it down. Man, he said this and he didn't care. He was like, yeah, this is baseball. This is how you do baseball. If he can't handle that, he needs to get out.
Crazy.
Like, he was an awful man.
Yeah, that's crazy. It's also, when you think about, like, even like you played a gay character 28 Days and a lot of these things that nowadays, like, even saying those words in a movie, you probably wouldn't do it if it came to you today. I don't know. Just in the climate that we're in now, a lot of characters that probably were part of your past, you might not get away with playing today. I don't know.
I wouldn't.
And probably wouldn't do it anyway.
I wouldn't be given the opportunity to play the character in 28 Days, because he was flamboyant. It was never really stated what his situation, his sexuality wasn't really part of his story, but he was this crazy person. And I got the role after playing, you mentioned that play where I played Adam. It was Adam and Steve, and it was a Paul Rudnick play. And I played the first gay man, and I wouldn't
do that today. Right. Yeah. It's a different climate.
I don't think they would, it would be a bad, there'd be backlash to it. Back then, people didn't care, I guess.
Right.
Because we did it in the West Village. It was like, it's not like the only people who complained were the Christians.
Yeah, it is wild how that's changed. How, as growing up, it was always the right wing that was offended. The right side was offended. Right. And now it's the left side that gets offended. It's a wild time for that, which is weird to think. Back then, it was always like, you know, Marilyn Manson was the devil's music and this and that. And now it was always the right wing complaining of the right side. And now the left side is, it's you know, fascinating to take a step back and look at the way that's changed.
I get it. I mean, I get, at least in those instances, like the Gerhard Weinock, the character I got to play, he's, especially if the experience is of a gay man, like what? Like, right. I don't know that experience. There's, and if it's a, if you're persecuted, which is happening more and more, which is, it's, we're entering a really scary time with
it
that.
It is a weird time. But to get into happier times now, going back to Resident Alien, is it pressure that you, it has to be that you've never felt before? Because this is you, I mean, other than Con Man, where you did everything,
right.
You know, the writer, the director, I think, and in it, which is about your experiences in cons, right?
Right.
But this show, you are the character, the main character. Right. You know, it's all on you. And even though you have a great supporting cast, you had to attack it differently. Like you just said with, I mean, VO work for you, I'm sure it's easier, but 2 days prior is when you're looking at the script. I imagine that's not the case with Resident Alien.
No. Oh, I gave myself away, didn't I? Let me clear my throat and go to work. It is more involved, and I do care a lot about it. And it's hard for me to watch. That shows the level of how much the pressure I put on myself. Like when I watch an episode, I'm kind of like, I could do that better. I should have maybe done that better. Oh, I wish we would have used a different take. I have a lot of opinions about it. Whereas if you don't, if it's just like, we're just having fun, then you don't really give a damn about it. But I care a lot about it. I get to read the scripts early and pitch around some ideas, which Chris is very open to.
That's great.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun to, I really like having an improv thing that gets adopted and part of the show, and people will be like, I like that line. And it's like, oh, that was mine. But there's something even more satisfying when you have something that's a little bit more substantial that you're like a scene you wrote or co-wrote, I should say. Right. I have not been handed the scene to write, but I've definitely gone, what if we took this scene in this direction and then like, co-wrote it.
And you're also kind of playing, which I think I could say technically four different people on the show, maybe five, because you're playing Alien Harry,
right?
You're playing real Harry sometimes in flashbacks,
right?
Dead Harry,
right? Yeah, right? Dead Harry.
Then an alien on its own in human form and big alien. So technically all these different characters, but they're all you, which seems like a role tailor-made for you. By the way, one other big thing that I'm a fan of, a friend of mine since I'm 10 years old, and you were on with her on Curb Your Enthusiasm, Susie Essman, who's done this show, and you did an episode of Curb. I've known her since I'm 10 years old. She's one of my family's best friends, so I've known her forever. So it was great to see you on that show because I watched that show religiously.
How cool. Yeah, that was a very special show. That was a very special show.
Really great. So we have to do the first because we're almost out of time. So we'll hit the first, Shannon.
The first time ever I saw concert, did drugs, had sex.
The name of the show is the SDR Show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Show. We've asked every guest this since the dawn of time. We start with rock and roll, and we just mean the first concert you went to on your own volition. It doesn't have to be a rock concert. Whatever comes in your mind when you think of the best first concert you went to. And hopefully not some local band we never heard of.
No, I wish it was a cooler band, but it was of the time, Thompson Twins.
That's cool. I'm fine with that. What was their hit?
OMD opened for them, which that was actually sort of the better. They had that one song, Lies, 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 Yeah. The Swatch Tour. Hold Me Now.
They had to Hold Me Now. That was another big one, right?
Yes.
That's cool. Yeah. How old are you?
I was 14.
Okay, so that's good to go. My first concert, I was 16. All right, so now the first drug you ever did after weed, unless weed wasn't your first drug. Because everyone's is weed usually, unless weed wasn't your first.
It is a gateway.
Yeah.
It's the word on the street, man.
And if it was acid, maybe that's where Harry, you pulled the drug vibes from the show. But what was your second drug?
Well, I grew up in Dallas in the 80s, so it would have to be ecstasy.
Ecstasy.
Because that was where it was a big place for ecstasy. Yeah, I did ecstasy. I
didn't know that.
Did you
down
love
in
it?
Deep Ellum. I loved it. And it was a happy drug. I couldn't believe it. I remember just walking down the street, how annoying I must have been, talking to everybody. And I remember my parents, and then I had a bad hangover from it. I remember my parents asking me, "Are you on drugs? You can tell us. We're your friend." And I went, "Okay, yeah. I took this stuff called ecstasy, and it's amazing. You guys should take it." I got grounded. Didn't know your friends could ground you, did you?
That's crazy. Yes, James.
I mean, this has got me. First of all, I had no idea that Dallas in the 80s was ground zero for ecstasy. My brain goes wild. Did you do ecstasy? Any stories with the Cowboys or SMU football? To me, that's the greatest. Did you do any ecstasy with Danny White?
With those guys.
Would that be the greatest thing ever? Here's Herschel Walker. Do you got any dirt on Herschel Walker as he's going to become a senator? Let's get that shit out, Alan. Let's end it right here.
You know what's funny?
I was afraid of football players.
I think they're intense. The story on the show once, but years ago, I had a rock radio show, and three of the Dallas Cowboys started a heavy metal band.
What?
And I can't remember the name of the band or whatever, but it was three. I don't know anything about sports.
Tony Casitas.
But they came into my apartment to record an episode, and I'm 6'5", 250. I'm a big dude, right?
Yeah.
But this was the only time in my life that I felt tiny, because all these guys were 6'7", 6'8", 3-something. And I have in my apartment, the elevator opens up into the apartment, right? And cool. They came separately. The band was called Free Reign. Thank you, Shannon. But I don't remember who was in it. But it was three guys from the Dallas Cowboys. But the last thing, they all came separately. But when they left, all these three monsters get into the elevator together. Oh, here it is. Leonard Davis, Mark Colombo, and Corey Proctor. Those are the three guys, right? Thank you, Shannon. And the last thing I said to them is to get into the elevator, they said, "Was it too many of us in the elevator?" I'm like, "No, you're going to be fine." And then they were stuck in my elevator for 3 hours.
No.
They missed their record release party. And they fucking hated me. They were so mad at me. The fire department had to come and pry them out of the elevator.
That's the greatest thing I've ever heard in my life.
And I was like, if you hate the Dallas Cowboys, you fucking love me right now. That happened on that day. It was crazy. All right. So then lastly, the first time you had sex.
It was this really cool girl named Mary. Also Mary. And she was a skateboarder. I skateboarded. And I met her in Houston watching Tony Hawk skate. Yeah. And she was so badass. We go skating all day.
And how old then, were you?
I was 17. It took me a while.
No, that's a 17. Pretty common age. It's a pretty common age.
Yeah. Yeah. So 17. But the cool thing about it was when I was 13, there was this club, this young, 13-year-old club where you could go and dance and there was no alcohol served. And there was this girl there who was so hot. She had her head shaved and she had an anarchy symbol drawn with eyebrow liner in the side of her head. And I had such a crush on her. She was so fucking hot and so effortlessly cool. And the night that her and I did it, it was in her room. Her parents were away and I went into her bedroom and there was a photo in a frame on her thing. And I picked it up and it was her from when she was 13. And she was that fucking
girl.
Wow.
That is a fucking great story.
Yeah, man. And she was so cool. And she's still really cool. She lives in Austin.
That's a great fucking story. Jesus
Christ.
Yeah,
she's a drummer. She's a drummer in a punk band. She's still fucking badass.
That's so fucking cool. That's a great story. It's better than any fucking Flash or Superman story. I'll tell you that right now. That's fucking real life, kids. And also, by the way, just to mention a couple of things, just I'm such a big fan. I love Final Space. You did some voice in Rick and Morty. Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, there's so many things. You're in Big Hero 6. I mean, it's crazy how many fucking things you've done. It is wild. It really is wild. And you apparently did a really hot girl that used to have an anarchy tattoo. You did that too. It's great.
Dude, she was cool. She's and so cool.
The last question is a new movie coming out, The Trouble with Jessica. You want to give us a little insight on that?
It's such an English title. The Trouble with Jessica. The Difficulty with Jessica. The Conundrum about Rebecca. It's different from other stuff that I've done because it's very natural. It's similar to a movie I did. It's kind of a farce. It's farcical. It is about a woman. You'll see this in the trailer, so I'm not giving anything away. It's about a woman named Jessica. It's a group of friends.
It'd be really weird if the girl in it wasn't named Jessica. That would be strange.
Yeah, that would be.
It'd be really punk. Quite honest.
She's a little troubled, obviously. She's the trouble. And she hangs herself at our house at a dinner party. She goes out into the garden and hangs herself. And we have to get rid of the body because I'm selling the house. And if this sale doesn't go through, it screws everything up in my life. And so we all make a group of five people decide to make the difficult decision to take her back to her apartment and rehang her there.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yes, that is the greatest. I've never felt more sold on anything in my life. Can I just be honest? Like, I was like, is he really going to tell us she hung? And I'm like, I'm not going to lie. I didn't know this was your next movie. I didn't know anything about it. I can't wait for it to come the fuck
out. Sounds great. Yeah, that, you sold me on that pitch. You should good elevator pitch for sure.
Oh my God.
All right. So obviously you could watch him now in Resident Alien as Dr. Harry Van Der Spiegel. Hard to say.
Thank you.
Great. I really enjoy the show. The second half of season two is happening right now. Trouble with Jessica, I think, is coming out in a couple months or something like that.
I want to go wait in the theater right now, God damn it!
And you will not see him in the Rogue One cartoon. That we know for sure now, apparently. So
Andor. It's called Andor on Disney. But I'm going to be watching for Cassian, for Diego Luna. Great guy.
Fair enough. And then at Alan Tudyk on the Instagrams. Anything else you want to plug before we go around the room and do our plugs?
No.
Right, fair enough. James, your plugs?
You've covered it all.
Great. The James Mattern on Instagram and YouTube. Go watch the Check Spot special documentary, me performing during the worst part of the comedy show, the Check Spot, when everyone gets their bills and no one pays attention. It's in black and white. It's fucking cool. Also, you can buy vinyls of it on pinchrecords.com. Boom, boom, boom. And I'll be opening up for Chris DeStefano this fall. Go to chrisedcomedy.com, and we're going to play theaters and have a good time. Bam.
Let me just say something before Shannon's plug. Nothing is sadder than boom, boom, boom when you don't have a voice. It sounded so sad.
I feel bad for you. Ralph, you're not going to get this reference. Last night, I showed up to Comedy Cellar with no voice, and I pulled off three hosting jobs, and I turned to the GM. I go, this is the equivalent to Michael Jordan's flu game. That's what I did.
Shannon, your plug.
Flu game, Ralph. Name for a penis.
You can follow me on Instagram at ShannonLee6982 and listen to my podcast, The Thing Is Ding. We talk about bad dates, fighting, and ghosts. We have all sorts of interesting guests come on, comedians, musicians, reality TV stars, and porn stars, and they tell their own personal stories about a bad date experience, a time they got into a street fight, and an experience with the paranormal.
Okay, so now, Alan, don't give any indication here. Don't answer till we all pipe in our response. This is a hard one. Does Alan believe in the supernatural, ghosts, etc.? It's a hard one for me. I'm going to go with no. James?
See, I think there was a tell already. Before you could tell him no tell, I would have had no, hands down. But the enthusiasm in that, I'm going to go yes.
I'm scared. I feel like I want to say yes because I feel like the cooler people that are on the show that
Don't
give
fuck
like
yourself,
this cool
Shannon.
Vibe,
How about that?
I feel like that they usually say yes or that they want to believe. So I'm going to say yes.
And are you saying the people who are not the Fresno?
I feel to dig at me is what that was.
Are you saying
otherwise you're stupid.
In New York City of voices are
Alan, what's your answer? Do you believe in ghosts and the supernatural and or the supernatural?
Oh, no. Nah.
All right. Pow, pow.
Not cool.
God, I misread this whole thing.
Such a setup. I've never seen one, so I don't know.
Fair enough. All right. Follow me everywhere at I Am Ralph Sutton. My other podcast on health and wellness called Good Sugar Podcast comes out every Monday. We're opening up our first location. Unfortunately, it's just got pushed to early November. We're supposed to open end of September, but we're going to open early November. So come down and check us out. Yes, Shannon.
What about aliens, Alan?
Oh, aliens. You believe in aliens?
Oh, yeah. They
I think it'd be crazy not to believe in aliens. I mean, that's just.
A lot of people don't.
Please, by the way, text what's his name, Giorgio, Oumuamua. Ask him about Oumuamua.
Okay, I will.
I don't know how I'm going to find out the answer, but Oumuamua. For God's sakes, I want you to do that. And then that's really it. Thank you so much for coming on. We let our guests, we're going to let you pick a song of the week, thesdrshow.com/playlist. Do you want to do Thompson Twins? Do you want to do something else? I don't know. Anything on your mind?
A song of the week?
Yeah.
I'm going to go with the Books. A Cold and Freezing Night.
I don't never heard of that band. Wow. I don't know that.
It's very cool. It's different. Love music very much. The books. Cold and Freezing Night.
If you're Alex, a cool dude, you're Dallas Cowboys metal band. I'm gonna pick a wild band.
By the way, it's funny.
The three guys off the bench for the Cowboys.
They had one guy that could really play guitar, but he was like 5'8", and he wasn't in the Dallas Cowboys. The rest of them sort of played their instruments. Their shtick was they were the heaviest metal band because they were also
look
big.
At that. You see that? Yeah. The fine line between clever and stupid, like Spinal Tap said.
All right, so we'll add that to the playlist. Alan, thank you so much. I would say if you were a really cool guy, you would have put on the chicks, the 14-year-old girl's new rock band, that she's a punk rock drummer, you said. You would have put her song in the mix.
I don't know her band right now. All I know is they dressed as nurses. It was all female band. They dressed as nurses and doused themselves in blood before, fake blood before they played.
Well, I'd go see that just as soon as I'd go see The Trouble with Jessica. I'll tell you that. All right. We'll see everybody next time on the SDR show. Peace. Alan, thank you so much, man. That was so much fun.
Man, that was fun. Thank you very much. You're very, you, very generous.
Oh, very generous. Great. Thank you. As you can tell, we're big fans.
Hail to
Gorgo. Enjoy the Books. It's a weird ass band.
I'm going to listen to it right now. So thank you. Dude.
It's a good song. All right.
All right. Cheers, thank you.
Have a good weekend.
Cold freezing night. Oh, baby. Kill him. I wish I was a boy. Cold freezing night. Oh, baby. Ow, 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 ow. Come on, clap, clap, clap. All right, that's the attitude. Ow, 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 ow. And I wish I was a cold freezing night. Holy cow.
Why do you always get away with things? It's not fair, I tell you. It's not fair. I want to blow your brains out with... I am going to kill you. I need to think of something. So you stay alive as long as I want you to, because so I can kill you. You are such an idiot. I can kill you with a rifle, a shotgun, any way I want to. Probably by cutting your toes off and working my way up towards your brain.
Cold, crazy night. Oh, baby.
Boys do tougher than girls, I know that. And I wish I was a boy. And he is an asshole. He is that asshole. He's putting a box on his asshole. I wish I was a boy. Kill him. I'm gonna kill you. I'm gonna rip your hair off. I'm gonna get bald.
I believe I can soar.
such a nerd asshole. I wish I was a boy.
You're gonna get busted.
Kill him. I'm gonna kill you. I'm gonna rip your hair off. I'm gonna be bald. And everybody's gonna think, oh, look at Meredith, she's an idiot. Ha ha ha.
Yo, hi, man, y'all nerd, you nerd.
You've been listening to the SDR Show.